I'm Patty, I'm an alcoholic and an addict. Hi everyone, it's such a pleasure and an honor to be here, to come back home where I'm really from. You can tell I'm not from California by my accent. I'm really happy to be here and really ecstatic. It's been a plan for a few months now, and the opportunity to come here and meet everyone and see all the different meetings that you have here is really awesome. It's a wonderful, inclusive recovery, isn't it? It's really wonderful. So the topic I chose, and because Thomas said, you want to do a workshop? I said, sure. So I want to talk about something that I really is close to my heart, that I grew up with in recovery, and that's how to live a right living. Okay, it's how to live in recovery and sobriety or clean time, whatever you want to call it, to be happy, joyous, and free. And that's what I found here in Alcoholics Anonymous and other fellowships that I've been involved in. So the reason I gave the handouts out, because what I used to do is a step a month, and when COVID hit, everybody knows lovely COVID, we didn't have an opportunity to see each other. And I thought, what the heck are we going to do? How are we going to be able to share our experience, strength, and hope? Because we were all in a shutdown situation. So I opened a Zoom account. And so we all gathered together and said, how about let's do the steps? So I made this up and I said, okay, so we'll do a step a month and we'll talk about it, we'll answer questions, and we will, have a more intimate relationship with one another. And this is all women, sorry you guys, but this is women at the time. And we were close anyway, but we got closer by having the experience of being able to just share from our hearts. And this is what the language of the heart of Alcoholics Anonymous is all about. So I want to talk about what principle means, because we want to discuss that. There's a difference between principle and principles. Principles that you had when you were in high school. Those were authority figures. This is the principle that we're talking about, that we have a belief system. We have a value. We have a trust. We are accountable. We have standard attitude about how we like to live. And that there is principles behind every step. I don't need to hold it. Okay. All right. Thank you. I'm glad, because that was going to be a little bit hard for me. It's kind of wiggly and I wasn't sure. Okay. So we want to describe what, and we have an understanding of one another. How do we describe that to each other?
If I move this up a little bit, you can be a little bit closer. All right. Now that should be perfect.
Got it.
Yeah, there you go.
Thank you. I think they locked it so I wouldn't be flying down the. So it's kind of like what I grew up with anyway, the golden rule. Do unto others as they have them do unto you. So the principles are referred to what our truths are. What are our general beliefs? Putting principles before personalities. We hear that a lot. So if I'm judging you, then I'm judging me. So how important it is for me to be able to be in my own truth, be kind to myself, have love and tolerance, patience and pausing and prayer, then I'm not in a position to ever judge you, because I'm working on me. So that's what principles before personalities is. Okay? So we want to have. So I found that working the steps in my life over the many years I've been here is about integrity. Okay? And the integrity is making decisions that are based on, I would say, probably uncompromising, honest, moral values of myself. Yeah. So when I look at myself in the mirror, my insides match my outsides. That's real important. And that's all the things I was taught in recovery. Because I grew up in this program. When they said we're rehabilitating, I was habilitating, and there's a really big difference. So we want to have continuous improvement. So part of principles is having continuous improvement in our life. How we seek that improvement. Where do we go to get that? We work the steps. We have a program that is the best in the world, has saved my life, and it is definable by the facts, a proven from 1935, that it works. All I have to do is follow directions. Mm-hmm. That's all I have to do. So, and I also have to be gratitude. You know, you can't be grateful and hateful at the same time.
Yeah.
Mm-mm. Or grateful and depressed at the same time. You know, any of those negative things are opposite of gratitude. But when you're grateful for what you have. You own what you have, and you say, well, I love to have all my wants. I love wants as best as anybody else. But if I am grateful for what I have, then other things seem to come along when I'm expected. That's kind of like God's hands in my life. So the other thing I want to talk about, too, about that, is that I gave you these handouts and bookmarkers. So the handouts that we talk about here, and let's take just a little bit of step one, you know. We all know the first step. Is there any real, there's some newcomers here. Is there anybody that's under 30 days here in the room? Okay, welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous.
Thank you.
I hope that you find here that what everyone else has found here in this chair and put your name on that chair. It's yours. Yeah. And I hope you stay. Okay. And what the thing about the first step is the principle is honesty. Now, why is that so? Because because this is a disease of denial. I used to tell people when I worked in treatment, I said, it's not the river that runs through Egypt. You know, it's denial. And we have to recognize that this is a disease that tells us we don't have it every day. It tells us we don't have this disease, you know. And I think that the issue is that's why we need each other, so that other people, we start identifying with one another and go, God, they told my story. How they know that? So it's real important. So if you take a look at this, and the reason I did it this way, you have daily on the side here, and it says daily repeat of the step. What you are is more important than who you are. So when you look yourself in the mirror, you go, okay, I say myself, Patty, you're an addict and an alcoholic. You've used everything under the world, and what you are is more important than you are, and you have a second chance at life. You might not get this chance again. Okay? And Tom and I were sharing this morning at breakfast, and sometimes this pisses people off, but this is my belief, and I'm going to tell you the reason. Relapse is not a part of recovery. Relapse is a part of our disease. Recovery is part of our spiritual growth. So that means that's why it's so important that you repeat. If you're having trouble with your life being unmanageable, then you can answer these questions that are on this step. Okay? And you might have to say, okay, so what am I powerless over? What is my powerlessness over? What? People, places, things, right? What else are we powerless over? Our addiction? Anybody else? Anything else you're powerless over?
Life in general.
Life in general, okay.
My wife.
Happy wife, happy life. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah. We're powerless over, we can't control, right?
Yeah.
We cannot control. Can we control our addiction, control our active using? No. That's why we're here, okay? So we have that disease every day that can stay in our head and say, oh, you're it's okay. You can just have one little thing, it won't bother you, or you'll say, wow, you know, I really miss such and such. How do we change that thinking? How do we change that thinking? What do we do? Anybody know? What do we do?
Make new habits.
Okay, and how do you do that?
Repetitive
habits. Mm-hmm. Where do you get that from?
God.
Where else?
The brain.
Where else?
Other people?
Sponsorship?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, if you don't have a sponsor, get yourself one. I was told that my I'll never forget this. This guy told me this many years ago. I was sitting at NAVA, and he says, and I was crying. He says, what are you crying over? I said, oh, I don't know, you know, I'm just sad and unhappy. And he says, well, you want a fur-lined pity pot? And I said, no, I don't want a fur-lined pity pot. And then he says, do you have a God in your life? I said, no, not yet. I was like 5 weeks, you know, clean and sober. And he goes, well, he says, if you turn your life over to the care of God, at least to be out of the hands of an idiot. And I looked at him and I thought, well, he has a good point. I went home. My daddy was in recovery. And I told him, and he goes, well, what do you think that means? I said, I don't know. He says, maybe you're running on self-will. And self-will is going to get you loaded. You're going to be back on the streets. And you go back on the streets, you cannot come back in this house. Okay? So we know that what's the difference between God's will and self-will. God's will doesn't hurt. Self-will does. When I'm turning things over to God, sometimes I actually have to physically maybe do that. So I get a God box. Everybody heard of a God box? Yeah, God box. Get your old shoe box or a cigar box or whatever box you got. And, you know, you can some girls like to decorate it, you know. And then they, so whatever you're worried about or you're scared about or you're feeling fearful about, you write it down. What if something's not going your way and you're in that pity pot? You write it down on a piece of paper and you physically fold it up and you put it in that slot. Don't look at it. Take it out in a month and go, that bothered me? Really? It's a way of turning it over. It's how we physically learn how to turn things over. And I think because as an addict and alcoholic, I'm very visual, you know, and I need to be shown. I need proof, you know, how we have skepticism and we want proof, you know. There's no proof. The proof is, that we're other people here. We help one another. That's our proof. We see it in other people's eyes that they're happy and joyous and free, and we want what they have. And we ask somebody to sponsor us, so we say, I don't know what to do. Well, I'll guide you through the steps. I'll help you. That's the proof. And then we see people have successes in recovery. But we have to watch that because our lives can still be unmanageable for long-term recovery because of our ego. Ego. And ego is easing God out. So when you haven't got, you have ego in your life and you go, wow, I got myself a new car and I got my own business and I got a Rolex watch and I got this and I got that. So what? How'd you get it? You know, where did it come from? Well, I'm clean and I'm sober. I said, that's great. But don't forget to be grateful. Grateful for what you have. I've seen too many people have that big shotism. And I was told years and years ago, this little old man that I knew named Joe, that Tom and I were talking about, he says, one shot, we're all shot. And there's no big shots. But yet he was one of them, you know, back in the day. I learned from others. A lot of this material is not new. This is all things that have been my experience, my strength and hope, and that I've received graciously for free and for fun from other people. So we want to have the knowledge to know the 12 steps. We want to integrate them in our life. And we want to know that if we do have our life is still unmanageable, sometimes it's what I'm reacting to and not responding to. It's what I'm reacting to. If I react, then all those character defects come out, makes my life unmanageable, and I'm off and running, and I'm not being grateful for what I have. I get depressed, I get self-pity, and then pour me a drink sometimes, or a drug, or whatever. You know, I was a garden variety. I did everything. I was on heroin, I was on everything. I was on the streets, I was on everything. So I have to remember that, you know, I'm here but for the grace of God. So all the slogans we see around the room are very useful in principles. And how so? How are they useful? So if we take a look at at some of the slogans that we have, you know, like easy does it. You know, I used to think, well, easy does it means just sit around. That's not what it means. It means easy does it means sometimes we are easier on others and harder on ourselves. That's what puts principles before personalities. We stop judging others. And that's what it really means. Easy, you know, harder. We're harder on ourselves than other people. Now, that doesn't mean that we need to beat ourselves up. What I'm just saying is we have to take a look at ourselves in the mirror and not at other people. So we easy does it, but we do the work. We take the action in our recovery. We become accountable. We use the values and the tools that we learn in recovery. We have integrity. We learn how to trust. We learn how to be honest, which is the first step. So you can't do anything until you take the first step. They say, well, it's the first drink that gets us drunk. It's not the second drink, right? So we know the first step is where we have to start. And I remember my sponsor saying to me one time, she says, put your right foot on the first step and your left foot on the 12th step. How comfortable are you going to be? Pretty stretchy. You're not going to be too comfortable. That's why it's one step at a time. And I believe that you don't wait to take a step a year. Or you take, you know, the step a month thing here was just an exercise we did on Zoom. You know, if you're working with a sponsor or you're sponsoring someone, you know, get them through those steps. You know, get them through those steps. Don't wait a year. You know, they should be doing secretarying or chairing or service work by the time they got 6 months sobriety or clean time. Get them active. Because when we're out of ourselves and we're in service, what does it do? It boosts our self-esteem, our self-worth, help us understand our values, boosts and gives us integrity, accountability, and a better attitude. So I really believe in that. I think it's really important. The other thing I guess I want to talk about too, with the other slogans is, what does first things first mean? Anybody want to have an idea? What does that mean? Yes?
If we don't admit, then we aren't aware, so we kind of lose any touch with reality.
Wow, okay. Okay. So awareness, being aware of ourselves and accepting ourselves is what you're feeling about first things first. Okay, that's a great idea. No, it's a good idea. First things first is also, you know, putting priorities, kind of similar to what you're talking about here. You know, priorities, putting our priorities in life. So what's my first priority? What is the priority? We're in recovery here. What's the first? What is it?
Not taking a drink.
Hello? No, drink a drink.
Right.
Keep it simple. They used to say keep it simple, stupid to me. Keep it simple. Don't louse it up. That's one of Bill's talks in one of the conventions in 1961. Okay? So then what is the other thing? What do we do when we hear the word, this is the one that always tripped me out, think. No? No thinking?
Think before.
Yeah, think before you drink, okay? And they told me that don't think, Patty, because you're going to plot, plan, and scheme. Because we're good at manipulating, rationalizing, detouring, distraction, all that good stuff. I'd rather do this and do that. I'm not going to follow what my sponsor says. She's full of crap. I'm going to do my own thing. What gets us in trouble? What is that called? Stinking thinking.
Insanity.
Insanity. Doing the same thing over again, expecting different results. Exactly. Okay. How about let go and let God?
Get out of the way.
Okay. And how do we do that? Huh?
Daily.
Okay, let go and let God sometimes is pause. Mm-hmm. Use the three P's in your life. Pause, prayer, patience. Pause, prayer, and patience. That can help anything in all the steps. Okay? So we need to go from self-will to God's will. And that's what principles help us do. When I'm in self-will, I'm in manipulation, I'm in bad attitude, I'm in scheming, plotting, planning, doing my own thing, I'll work the steps later, I know those steps. I mean, I've been here a long time, and you know, years ago, I go, I already know those steps, but are you working them?
Right.
You may know them, but are you living them in your life? There's a real difference. Okay, so that's a way to let go, let God, first things first. How about buffer the grace of God? Buffer the grace of God, there go I? What does that mean? Huh? Yeah. How many people we have in California that are homeless is unfriggin' believable. Unbelievable. You go down 680 or 880 or one of, you know, and it's just unbelievable in Oakland specifically. It's a disaster. And you know, and I look at that and I try to practice it. I practice my recovery and my principles. Would I help any of those people? I would try if they asked for help. I would be there if I could. We're kind of coming up with a pamphlet through GSR and through General Service in New York, and they're looking at maybe a pamphlet on how to help the unhoused. How do we help the people that don't want it, or want it but don't know how? What are the resources for these people? So this is where H&I comes in, and bridging the gap, and a lot of the things that we have the resources. It's available to everyone. And those of us that are more fortunate than others, you know, that's where "but for the grace of God" comes from. But for the grace of God, there go I. You know, I didn't wake up one morning and said, "Gee, I can't wait to join Alcoholics Anonymous." No. It had to come from something greater than me. Okay, so those are the slogans. Can you see how that integrates into principles and values and change and accountability and appreciation for your recovery? Yeah. That's what keeps me around for as long as I have. And it gives us humility, okay? When they used to speak of humility, if you say you're humble, you lost it kind of thing, because that's a tough topic. But when I take a look at what humility is that when the pupil is ready, the teacher appears. When the pupil is ready, the teacher appears. So that just means that we're open-minded, we're willing to go to the length that we need to go through to be teachable. And we learn from each other. It's not just a sponsor. You know, we learn from everyone. Somebody says something, we go, aha. That's an aha moment, you know. And that could be a spiritual awakening. And you could be sitting in this chair and have a spiritual awakening. It can be any of those things. So we always try to keep an open mind. And that's one of the principles. And then we have hope. Hope. What's the second step say? That we want to come to believe that a power greater than ourselves can restore us to sanity. That means we want to stop doing the same thing over again, expecting different results. And insanity goes along with unmanageability. And sanity means soundness of mind. So when we come in recovery, we get our mind gets different. Our thinking gets different. We change from old ideas to new ideas. So there's a practice that we want to continue to do that. And in the big book, I put little things where you can find the steps, okay? So there is a solution. And why do you think that's a title? Because there is a solution. You don't have to be alone anymore. You can live life on life's terms, or hopefully try. And that's how I had to do. And then we learn more about alcoholism. We learn that this is a dis-ease. We learn that the ism of our disease, that my ism started long before I picked up a drink or a drug. It was just doing push-ups. It was there waiting for me. And then when I put that drug or drink in my mouth, I felt sane. Now that's insanity right there. Self-destructive behavior. So there's stories in the book that if you haven't correlated them with the steps, maybe this will help you. And it sure helped me, even though I've been around a long time. It helped me to understand it better. And it made me want to read more. I mean, I've read the big book lots and lots of times. And I grew up on the second edition. And then in the second edition, I grew up with a professor in the paradox. And in there, it states that we surrender to win. It's the only place we can come to surrender to win. We surrender the destructive of our lives. We get our life back to some order. We find a life. We can actually see the blue sky and the green grass for the first time in our lives. We get out of that emotional cave, and we learn how to be part of society. And we gain sanity because we start to build a self-esteem, and people want us in our life where they said, "Oh God, here he comes," or "Here she comes." No, "Oh great, it's good to see you again. I'm great. I love you." And this is the only place that I know that I can say what I want to say and you understand me like other people would not understand me. I'm not being judged. And that's what I love about Alcoholics Anonymous. It saved my life. The second part of that paradox of the professor, it states also that we give it away to keep it. So by the time you're working the steps, you've got some. So somebody walks in, you got like 3 months, and you're on step three, or you're on working your step four. And somebody comes in, and you go, well, I don't have anything to say to them. Well, yes, you do. They've never been to a meeting before. You got more time than they do. You welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. Mm-hmm. You introduce them to people, and you make them feel not alone. We have greeters, which was different than when I grew up here. They didn't have greeters at the door. We have greeters in my home group, and they welcome you in. And if they don't have, if you don't have a sponsor, they have a sponsorship coordinator. They say, wow, you know, if you need a sponsor, go see Sally. She'll hook you up, or she'll introduce you to other people. Because we're shy. We don't know how to ask for help. Even though I've been here a long time, sometimes it's still hard to ask for help. Oh, I don't want to bother them. They won't. And that's the insanity of my thinking. Because I know they want to hear from me, but I don't know what to say. I remember having to pick up that heavy phone back in the day, and I was supposed to call my sponsor every day. Well, what was I going to tell her? They said, just say hi. I'd call it, say, hi, this is Pat. That's what I was called. This is Pat. Hi, bye. I didn't know what to say, you know. But and later on, I started, you know, asking questions. And I wanted my answers questioned. I wanted my answers questioned, which means I thought I had the answer, but I need to question that and make sure. So I go to someone that has more experience than I do, as a sponsor or somebody that's been around a while. And I asked them, I said, do you have it? I want to ask you what, this is what I figured out. Is this correct or what do you think? Sometimes I was way off the beam. Way off the beam. And if I'd acted on that situation, I would have created more insanity in my life. Could have been an old behavior. Such as when we make amends to people, except when to do so would injure them or others. We are the other. We are the other. I'm sponsoring a girl right now, and she says, well, such and such happened to me, and I grew up in a horrible atmosphere at home, blah, 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 and all the details. And in this situation, I said, I don't think you should make amends. You're going to put yourself in harm's way. Well, someone told me I need to make amends to my drug dealers. I said, absolutely not. I said, no, 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 no. I said, no. No, you don't. No, you don't. Okay. So, because that puts us in harm's way. And I'm just saying, that's another part of insanity when you start thinking that way. Okay. So, if we work the steps in order, we're going to get better results. If we hopscotch around, then we're going to get mixed up recovery. So we want to stay in order. Okay, let's see what time we got here. Okay, so anyway, I can't believe it's been, time goes by, doesn't it? So the other thing that I think is important that we work on is an inventory. Okay, I want to talk a lot about fourth step for a reason. Because fourth step is to me, this is what separates you from being dry and being in recovery. Right. There's a real definite difference. You can do a fourth step. There's so many formats in doing a fourth step, right? There's tons of formats. But to be on principle and to have the courage and to get your integrity and to find out who you are and to have good values and self-care and letting go of old behaviors, this is where the core. This is like peeling the layer of the onion. And even I know some people have been here a long time, is, you know, a lot of sobriety in here. And you know that you peel the layer of the onion, you're always going to come up with something else that happens in your life. And it may be something new that you never experienced before, but you've been around a while and you go, oh, wow, I didn't know that came up. Something can trigger you, okay? So we have these called trigger tracks in our life. They trigger us. So the fourth step and doing a fifth step is going to help us to see those triggers in our life, okay? So we want to take a look at the inventory, okay? So it says in the big book that we take an inventory in what areas?
Everything.
What does it say?
Resentment, fear, sex, conduct, and harm to others.
Thank you, Tom. Okay. So those are the things we take an inventory in, okay? Now, what surrounds those areas? You can do it like the big book says, as I was angry at Mr. Brown because blah, 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 blah. Or you can do it another way. There's many different ways. I was told to do it. Write down the most horrible thing that ever happened to you that you never want to tell anybody. that you're afraid to talk about. Get that out of the way, because that's the core of what's really bothering you. And most of the time it's around shame and guilt. Shame, guilt, fear. You know, something happened to us, or we did something to somebody else, or blah, blah, whatever it is. That's what I started with. Now, that's not, it just helped me, because I had some issues that I, being young, but things happened to me, and I was scared, and I, my sponsor says, just write that down, and we'll talk about that. I said, okay. So I went home, and I did my inventory. God, it's terrible. I did my inventory the first time I ever did it. I had like 3 months, and I wrote it all down, but I wrote down that everybody that harmed me. You know, I still had the blame game, being a victim, not being responsible, because that's where my mind was at. I was so hurt. And she says, no, she says, we got to do that over. So she told me to go back home and do it over and see her next week or whatever. So I did, and I understood what she said. She says, I need you to go back to your house and look at what, and I'm going to tell you what resentment means. So she gave me a definition of resentment. Because I had no clue what some of these words meant. I had to look them up in the dictionary. You know? And she says, a resentment means to re-feel. Past hurts, re-felt. So we get triggered and something reminds us, somebody might remind us of something happened in our past, we haven't dealt with it, and what happens? We get a resentment. Now, if somebody either reminds us of something, we've worked the steps, we've done a thorough inventory, and we look at it, we look at our side of the street, and we go, gee, that happened to me. Maybe I can help them. But we can't do that until we see and be aware of what our what the issue is at hand. So we have to write it down. And it's very important. So a lot of us know how to do an inventory. Some don't. And some of them are new. You'll get there when you'll get there and understand an inventory. So we want to review the basic instincts. We all have social instincts, sexual instincts, we all have those instincts, and we all have desires. But sometimes we have to put those desires on a hold and look at the cause and the effect of what happened and what we're going to do differently. And that's the hard part for a lot of us in recovery. But we work on that every day. I do anyway. So I can't sit around. It says, what are the most chronic symptomatic thoughts as a reaction to these fears? Well, we worry. We get insecurity. We ruminate over it, regurgitate over it. We chew it like a cud, like cow chooses his cud. And we go, you know, I can't let this go. I can't let it go. I can't let it go. And then this, again, sets us up for relapse behavior. So if we do a thorough inventory and we let things go, we write down the defects, but we also have assets. Some of my assets that used to be my defects, okay? Perfectionism. My husband can tell you. I go behind him and wipe the counter, you know? But I'm a perfectionist, you know? And I just kind of grew up that way. But years ago, it was a very negative situation. It was controlling. And now it's not. I've learned how to balance it. I can let things go. If my husband leaves a kitchen cabinet door open, I tell him. I don't go do it behind it, you know, like enabling. I say, you left the kitchen cabinet door open. Oh, okay. He shuts it. So that I'm not getting angry. Like, why can't he close those blankety blank? And why can't this happen and that? And I get revved up. So I've learned to let all that go. How important is that? That's kind of petty, isn't it? So I just let it go. And he deals with it, and he takes care of it. So it's balance. It's learning how to balance things in our life. Now, I wouldn't have known those things and how to quickly take care of those things if I hadn't worked my fourth and fifth, sixth and seventh steps. Yes?
Can you put yourself on a fourth step?
Yes, and you should. Mm-hmm. You should, you know? And a part of that is that if you're... Because we can get angry at ourselves because we wish we'd done this, we should have done that, why couldn't we have this way? And then we have to own that part in our life and say, well, you know, maybe I was doing the best I can. Maybe I was doing the best I could do at the time, you know. But we don't want to rationalize it either, you know. So we have to be very clear is that we don't want to harm ourselves. And that, again, is part of what the ninth step says, you know, except when to do so would injure them or others. Okay? So I am another. You're another. We're another. So we make amends to ourselves. We make amends. Forgiveness is the key to letting go and letting God. Forgiveness is the key to see God's hand in our life. Forgiveness is a key to have humility. Did you know that? Mm-hmm. Because when you have forgiveness in your life, you have love. I went through a lot of grief in sobriety. A lot of grief. I've lost a lot of friends. In fact, I lost a dear friend 2 weeks ago. Not even that long. Sweet woman. She died in her sleep. She was recovering years. She had many sponsees, and now I have one of her sponsees. She calls me up. She says, Patty, this is Denise. I lost Rita, and I loved Rita, but I thought of you, and I wanted to know if you'll be my sponsor. And she gave me the most wonderful compliment that anyone could give to someone. She says, you always speak of love, and I know I can trust you. What the highest compliment I could receive. And I said, sure, of course. She said, well, I'm not high maintenance. That's what she told me. And I said, that doesn't matter. You know, she's got like 40 years. Yeah. So if I believe in my character defects, then it's more important than I believe in my higher power's forgiveness, if I'm believing in my defects of character. If I'm acting instead of responding, then I'm acting out old behavior. So character defects are like active addiction. They create a lot of problems for us when we practice them. And then we rationalize them. Well, I was only trying to help. I wish I hadn't said that. Oh, well, I'm not going to worry about it. You might need to make amends to that person. Okay. So shortcomings are what is present. So there, we talk about character defects, we talk about shortcomings. Are there a difference between character defects and shortcomings?
No.
No?
Okay. It's just reworked several different ways in the book.
Yeah. It's a big issue. But when the sixth and the seventh step are forgotten steps. Mm-hmm. We breeze through them. Okay, I did my fifth step, my sponsor says go home and read the prayer, study the prayer, let go of whatever's going on, make sure I didn't skip on the cement, and it tells us all the things we need to do in the sixth and seventh prayer, step prayer, that little handout that I gave you, there's the prayers on the back of that. Okay, so, but it does let us know that in the sixth and seventh step, we still have to do some work. Now, there's a book, it's not AA approved, so I forgive me for even mentioning it. Tom, you had something to say?
No.
Oh, okay, okay.
You mentioned that book.
I'm going to. So it's called Drop the Rock. And I have read that 5 times with different sponsees and studied it. I suggest if you got a little more than over a year, read that book. If you've done your fourth and fifth step, or do read, you'll understand it. Drop the Rock. Now, why does it say drop the rock? Now, that came from someone in the program named Sandy B. He was a circuit speaker, and he's not here with us anymore. And he says, I carried around so many rocks on my back that I had to learn to drop them. So he called it drop the rock. Carried around all the burdens, all the despair, the four hideous horsemen that talks about in the big book. Horror, terrible, you know, despair, bewilderment. And a lot of us, even in long-time recovery, can carry a lot of rocks on our back, and if you've been around long enough, it just gets heavier and heavier and heavier, where you can't walk. And then you've rationalized them for so many years, you got yourself in a corner, and you can't figure out, is that a defect, or what is that? And you're going to need extra help. And some of us need outside help. I don't know if anybody else had any outside help? Yeah, we all need all the help we can get. Yeah, and there's nothing wrong with that. But if you're new, get yourself grounded in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Or if you're in NA, get in the basic text or whatever program you're in. Get involved in that. Get your firm foundation. It's important. Okay, so I think at this point, because we can go through every step here, and I'd love to do that. I think we got like Well, a few more minutes, don't we? Yeah, we got more time. Okay.
We got time.
We got time? Okay, good. Okay. So in the fourth step then, so hopefully you get a sponsor that'll guide you what that means and how to take a fourth step inventory and how to let go of your fears, you know, any kind of disturbance in your life. Don't be afraid to write down the hard stuff. Please do so, because you don't want to repeat it again. Or you don't want to have transference, which means you see it in other people and it triggers you and you don't know how to handle it. Because I'm dealing with a girl right now that has that going on in her life, even though she's done a fourth and fifth. And I said, there's still something that's left out. And it has to do, one of them has to do with making amends. So you never know how it turns around on you. Okay, so I would just do it. If you have. And how many inventories can you do?
Many
as you need to. Right. The core one, the first one, is related mainly to what happened in our past. And what does the promise say? You know, that we'll not regret the door nor wish to shut the door on our past. But that is all. That is the time when we really cleaned up our wreckage of our past. So it's the past before we got here. We can have wreckage in our sobriety. Anybody ever had any wreckage in their sobriety? God, get honest here. Yeah. We had wreckage in our sobriety because why? Why?
Human.
We're human?
I mean, I think the wreckage was already there. We just are starting to see it. Like, it was already there.
Yeah.
But because we're becoming sober, we can actually see it.
That's correct. Well, you got a clear mind.
Yeah.
You're,
so it was there.
Yeah. You're clean and sober.
Yeah.
That is very true. And we have similar wreckage even in sobriety.
Go back to the microphone.
Oh, similar things. Okay, we have similar wreckage that we do. I'll tell you, one of mine was financial insecurity will leave us. When I got here, I didn't have any finances. So then I get good, start things going well, and guess what? I had to go through bankruptcy. Mm-hmm. Now, what kind of wreckage is that? Is that my fault? Yeah. Do I own a credit card? Yeah. How many times I'd freeze them in the freezer and take them out and defrost them? And I did that quite often. I learned that's old behavior. I want, and not what I'm grateful for.
That's right.
This is going to fix me. If I go shopping and buy these brand new pairs of shoes, even if they cost $300, I'm going to look good.
That's right.
You know? And it's not, and that is not, that's old behavior. So I paid a price for that. You know, it's like we said when we were drinking and using, we paid a high cost for low living, you know. And I did the same thing in recovery. I'm on my third marriage. This is my last. And one day at a time. My first two marriages, my first one was something that was old behavior, like, and I didn't value myself. The whole time, you shouldn't be marrying this man. You shouldn't be marrying this man. You're walking down the aisle. You're walking down the aisle, you know? And I paid a high price for that. So I own that. I own that. Now, do I have any regrets about it? Not anymore. But I know that if I look at it in hindsight, I see what happened. I see where I was at the time. I was young. I didn't know a lot. I was naive. And so I did. So anyway, so let's move on, and let's just look again at the fifth step. The fifth step gives us integrity. So if I share everything with my sponsor or whoever I get, a priest or whoever I'm comfortable with, and I share that and I don't leave anything out, I'm telling the truth. I'm telling the whole truth, and that's it. You know, I'm not swearing on a Bible. Maybe I'm swearing on the big book, but I'm doing what I need to do to have integrity. And when I do that fifth step, I ask my sponsees to do the third step prayer and get on our knees together, and we do the third step prayer together. God, I offer myself to thee to do with me and to make of thee as I will, to take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help. Abandon myself to God as I understand God. I got a little backwards there, but that is definitely what I do. So what I'm doing is we're physically getting on our knees. We're gaining humility. We're keeping an open mind. We're going to have a catharsis. We're going to get rid of all that toxins that's in our system, all that toxic emotional poison that's in our system. We're going to tell someone else what's been going on in our lives. What a freedom. It was a freedom for me. And I also have done other inventories in sobriety where I did one on truth, telling the truth. I did one on trust, truth and trust. Truth and trust. Allowing people to see me as I really want me myself to see myself. Yes?
I just have a quick question. It says to be a big book, 12 by 12 will no longer coincide. What does that mean?
What now?
It says the big book and the 12 by 12 will no longer coincide.
That just means that they will be different in different, it's different languages, okay? There's a different language. So if you read Into Action and you read step 5, it's going to be different information. But it all, but you can, you will see that it may parallel, but it's not going to be exact. It's not going to enmesh one another. So that's why it's important to read both of them.
Thank you.
Yeah, okay, you're welcome. A good question. Okay, so these are just some ideas to do on each one of them, where you read the big book, you read the 12 and 12, and you've, and your principle is integrity. Okay, so for suggestions, is what now do we want to admit to God and yourself and others? What do we want to tell other people about our, about ourselves? What do we want to tell our specific sponsor about what's going on? And then, and how do we turn it over? How do we really do that? How do we have, we see ourselves, we find ourselves, and we go, oh, wow, I really got to make amends to this person. I thought I didn't have to make amends to them. If you think about it, you do. Most of the time. Except when you do so, when it hurts you or hurt yourself, another. So it's, everything here is just real simple common sense. We don't want to louse that up. Keep it simple, you know. If you're working with a sponsor and you have this material that I've given you today and you find it to resonate or help you, share it with your sponsor if they're not here. Yes.
So when you say harm yourself or other and we're other, like me as an alcoholic, yeah. I will use that as, or you know, as a scapegoat. Like, oh, this is going to hurt my feelings, so I'm not going to make this amends, but. You know, now that I'm farther along, like I know it's more of a physical, isn't it? Isn't that true? It's more of a physical problem.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, you don't want to use that as an escape not to do what you have to do to make things right. Okay, so you want to only you use it when you know that, you know, like I told my sponsee, why would you go make amends to a drug dealer?
Yeah. Right.
You're putting yourself in harm's way. What if they, you know, have ammunition. I mean, you know, you never know. It's a harmful place to go. It's not a good playground. We talk about changing playmates and playgrounds. I'm just using that as an example, okay? But very true, yeah. We can rationalize anything. So, but we want to stay as honest as we can. And if we have, again, that's why we go to our sponsor. We go somebody that's knowledgeable if we have a question like that, you know, and we give them that example of what's going on in our lives. Okay. So determine which fears are real and imagined. You know the acronym for fear, false evidence appearing real. It used to be blank everything and run. So this is related to false evidence appearing real. That just means that it's not true. You don't know. So you have faith is the opposite of fear. So you go ahead and practice your faith and the fear goes away because it's usually imagined. This person doesn't like me. Well, how do you know they don't like you? Did they say they didn't like you? No. Well, they give me looks. How do you know? Well, I'm not going to talk to them. They don't like me, you know. And we rationalize things and what we might be is missing out for the best friend in our life. We don't know that until we all go up to them and say hi. So you say, you know, look, I used to look at people's shoes. I couldn't look people in the eye many years ago. It was really difficult for me. You know, I said, well, that's because I'm tall. You know, I'd rationalize that. Well, that's because, you know, they're down there and I'm here. And I'd rationalize it, make a joke of it. So it's so important that we look people in the eye. We face our fears. And that's one of the promises kind of in the big book. It says we look the world in the eye. It's not on the 11th promises, but it's one of the promises. And it says we'll be rocketed into a fourth dimension. Does that mean we're going to go up in a spaceship? No. What does it mean? We're going to be rocketed into a fourth dimension.
The higher plane.
We're going to be in a place we've never been. We're going to experience things we thought that we'd never happen in our life. New freedom, new happiness. All those promises come true, which have principles in our lives, because we're living the principles if we practice the promises. We definitely will. So we don't regret the past and wish to shorten the door on it. What principle do we speak of there? Courage?
Perseverance,
hope, love, all those things entangled into one. So correlate those with the promises in the big book on page 83. And it's on page 83 and all the editions. And then acceptance. I was at a meeting last night and it was on acceptance. And acceptance, it says, is the key to all of our problems. I think it's on page 417 in the fourth edition, page 449 in the second edition or the third edition. I can't quote it exactly, but acceptance is the key to all of our problems. And I have a little thing about acceptance, because acceptance is really puts everything in a nutshell, and I want to kind of close with acceptance for right now. So I wanted to share with you a little bit about the acceptance. Acceptance is relation to the Serenity Prayer, and there is a long form of the Serenity Prayer. And sometimes we don't read that, of course, in our meetings. But it goes like this. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Serenity, courage, wisdom. Living one day at a time, enjoying one moment at a time, accepting hardships as a pathway to peace. Taking as he did the sinful world as it is, not as I would have it. Trusting that he will make all things right if I surrender to his will. That I may be reasonably happy in this life and supremely happy with him forever in the next. Amen. So it tells it all in a nutshell. If I give it to a higher power, everything will turn out better than it would be if it was in my own hands. If I work on love, tolerance, and patience, and prayer, then I have wisdom in my life, and I gain serenity. I gain courage from doing that. So it's really a beautiful, beautiful prayer, and I think a lot of times I haven't stopped to really take a look at over some years ago. I didn't just kind of wrote, okay, we're going to say the Serenity Prayer before the meeting, or we say the we version for a prayer or whatever, and I never did look at really what the Serenity Prayer meant. I would just say it. So now I abstract it and understand what it means, and I've been doing this for a long time now. And it also says that we pray for our faith. We pray for faith. It's, you know, if we have fear, we go, God, please give me faith to accept the things I cannot change. Help me to get through this today. It's really hard today. I'm having a hard time with this coworker. My husband and I, or my wife and I, got in an argument, and I had to walk away, and it felt lousy to do that. And I don't know, do I need to make amends? What is my side of the street? We have to clean up our own side of the street. What is my pattern here? And that's what a fifth step helps us to look at, is unravel the pattern. So what we're doing when we do, and I'm going back to the inventory a little bit, we discover, okay, we uncover, discover, discard. Uncover, discover, discard. Those are the masters of what we're doing here. And what are we discovering? A new way of life. How to work the Serenity Prayer in our life. How to live life on life's terms. How to accept life on life's terms. How to accept other people. How to accept ourselves. How to forgive ourselves. How to practice hope. And all the principles we know how to practice now, because we have utilized what is freely given to us. Thank you for letting me share.